Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look!
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Everybody, welcome, Dr. Homebrew. Today's gonna be a good show. We're gonna do, I believe we're doing a commercial calibration of some sort.
What?
And we're gonna talk about the right way to fill out a judging score sheet.
Yeah. We're gonna also taste non-alcoholic beers, like six of them back to back, and see which one's the best.
You joke, but I have one. I have another one to try.
Another one.
It's a porter.
Is one of those
I'm still
what
trying
I pee
to choke
in your
down
mouth?
The first one here.
No, you don't have to. What's that, Char?
Let's just pretend I didn't say what I just said.
Okay, that's good. Appreciate that. That's the kind of humor and jokes that we like on the show.
Things you can't repeat.
Right, things you can't repeat
do you
or
have any
hear.
Light, any light low-cal IPAs?
Is that you were saying you were joking? I don't know if you were joking, but you were saying a thing before the first show. That's a thing now.
There's like there's like 100 calorie or whatever IPAs out there, like low cal IPAs. It's a thing.
Why is it a thing? Just because it needs to be, I guess.
Well, you know, I mean, things swing back and forth. People get tired of drinking.
They sure
the
do.
IPA has crept up until, 7.9 isn't enough anymore. A single IPA must be 8.3. And they're sick of it. And they want to stay kind of sober and drink their beer and enjoy it and still have all that hop flavor.
What's the ABV on a 100 cal IPA?
It's got to be like 4 or something.
That's not an IPA then.
But if you can make it taste like an IPA somehow.
It's not an IPA.
That you can magic it.
And that's said to be like a session IPA.
Being 4% and tasting like Pliny somehow?
It can't happen.
Okay.
Pliny the elder or the younger?
It can't happen.
I can't.
Right? I mean, can you admit you are more experienced than I am? Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, it would be hard to get the alcohol flavor, but if you get all the hop flavor and a kind of a proper balance for it, with maybe some light sweetness substituting for the alcohol, I don't know. I don't know, dude. It's unexplored territory for me because I've never had one.
You know what you should
do?
But
I'm intrigued.
You should take like some hop pellets and just put them in like a sack and put them in some hot water or some cold water and just let that flavor come out and drink it. And it's probably like zero calories.
Cold brew.
Hop tea, though.
I know. I'm just joking. because people do all kinds of weird shit. It's not any weirder than that seltzer nonsense people seem to like these days. Kids these days are their seltzer and their hazy IPAs and their pastry stouts.
That's true, but like, I mean, from a lot of the like session or lower ABV IPAs that I've ever had on this show,
they usually taste watery.
It's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible. Anything sub 5 that's trying to be an IPA, it's very hard to get that malt character in there.
So maybe it's not really a new thing. It's just there's a little pullback against everything being 7.5%, 8%.
Even one of my favorite breweries, they make a session IPA. It's like their one beer I don't like. And to me, it's like Alka-Seltzer because it's highly carbonated to the point where it's too minerally, I think, where it competes with the hops, and you have to do something to kind of... And I think the carbonation lifts the hop flavor and the hop aroma out, which is great, but then it's, you know, I don't want to be drinking Alka-Seltzer.
That's true. Not too much, anyway.
Not until it's the morning after.
All right, Brian Cooper, what are we doing here right now, my friend?
Well, we're tasting a beer that Don and I brewed together.
Okay.
And I tried to judge, you know, with an open mind, even though I know what's in there and how old it is. And also we're going to talk about judging score sheets.
All right.
How to fill one out.
Hell yeah. Well, what's the first beer? Because I don't have a beer here.
It's in that little cooler over there.
It's in the cooler. We're not even ready today? Oh, my goodness. What is going on?
Mr. always ready on the spot. Johnny here accuses us of being slackers.
Hey, all
do
I was
have
told
a heater to heat this up a little bit.
All I was told to do is start the show, and so I did it.
We're like,
now
this is like
here
we're scrubbing in right now. You know, we're scrubbing in for our analysis and everything
I'm
else.
To scrub this show.
IPAs, you don't want any help for you that much. Is that enough?
Nope, perfect. Thank you.
It's like I'm washing from my fingertips up to my elbows to be sure I don't contaminate the patient. So
that's true.
This is what we're doing right here.
I like how you said scrubbing up and then you described what it is. That was my favorite part about that.
Because I'm a little on the spectrum, and you know, like we've never watched the doctor show on TV.
I'm a good doctor. I always make fun of that because Taryn loves
I
that show.
I am a good doctor, and I also is that a show? The Good Doctor?
I thought you were making that joke.
Well, no, I was making a joke about like any doctor TV show always shows them like scrubbing up to their elbows and then putting their gloves on and shit.
No, there's a show called The Good Doctor. And he's an autistic like surgeon, so it's like House, but he's autistic. And
where are
so
we going with this?
Every time that I every time I walk in and she's watching the show, I'm a good doctor because it's called The Good Doctor. I'm a
he
good
says
doctor.
The name of the show. I respect that about him. You gotta say the name of the show.
All right, so
they advertise on the Brewing Network.
What beer is this? What are we drinking? Talk to me.
This is an IPA.
Okay,
an American IPA.
American IPA, brewed by you and Don.
We brewed it for the Northern California Homebrewers Festival last year, and they had a...
I thought we were doing a commercial calibration. When did that change?
It changed.
Good to know. It's good to know before the show, because I announced it during the show that we were doing a commercial calibration.
Because you were saying that, and I was like, are we going to have time for that? Because we have that and this and the other thing.
I'm up for whatever. We can do a commercial calibration as well.
No, let's have an hour and a half show. I said, go for it, man.
No.
Let's do it.
No. Okay, so we've pulled an audible. Now we're doing another homebrew. Now the host of the show is on the right page with everybody else. So I feel good. No, we can't start over. We've already done this for 6 minutes, and it's fascinating.
It's on the got a cool ship there. Hey, did we thank our sponsor yet?
No, because you're fucking with me with this shit.
This is good podcasting right here.
Thank you to Five Star Chemicals. You can go to fivestarchemicals.com and learn how to damage your co-host's eyes with PBW, hot PBW. No, I don't know. Clean look, people.
Don't put hot PBW in your eyes.
Or your co-host's eyes, use it to clean kegs. Use it to clean your carboys. And then sanitize those things. You don't do everything all at once. That stuff doesn't work.
We don't put hot PBW in our friend's eyes.
We don't.
That's not acceptable behavior.
I said co-host.
In other people's eyes.
That was a call. That was a callback from the first show when you said
gotcha.
That. Yeah. Okay. Great. Anyway, Five Star Chemicals. They love you. You love them. They're going to be at NHC in a couple of months here. So go ahead. Speaking of hot Nashville hot chicken, that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to call in sick for the floor for HomebrewCon, and I'm just going to eat hot chicken.
Are you guys going to HomebrewCon? Yeah. I got to get my tickets and get ready for that. I'm going to CBC.
I've told Jay I want to go, and he goes, So to me, that could be maybe not. I don't know, but I would like to go. Because it's the only way I'm ever going to get to Nashville without practice.
We're going to go to Dollywood afterwards, Pigeon Forge, and you know, spend like a couple of days doing the Dollywood thing.
Hey, yeah.
As long as we're already in Nashville, it's only like, 3 hours more? I might as well do Dollywood at that point.
That's right.
Yeah, JP, let's get the band back together, man.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a band?
You, yeah.
All right.
You remember?
No. Four Friends and Sam.
Okay. All right.
That's
well,
a deep cut.
I meant let's form a band.
Let's form a band and go to Dollywood.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do this IPA here, fellas. Cooper, why don't you go ahead? Since this is your fault, we're doing this. Why don't you start us off?
Okay. So we opened the bottle. It had a light hiss. The fill level seemed appropriate, and it was in a bottle without labels on it, which was nice. And aroma-wise, I'm getting a lightly hoppy with a little bit of resiny kind of quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
Notes of citrus and a bit of some dankness behind that. Moderate fruity esters. Clean ale fermentation is apparent. Bready malt behind the hops. But just the hops are not like, hey, here's the hops. And, here's some malt underneath here. It's like, hey, here's some hops. And then... hey, here's some malt underneath here. It's kind of almost even.
Right.
That's my whole point there.
Okay.
Lower hop than expected. No DMS or diacetyl. It's cleanly fermented. Seems like a good ale. But yeah, just a little underwhelming on that front. Not super pungent. Appearance-wise, it's pretty nice. Orangey-amber color. You know, the head started low and stuck around for a fair while, but you know, low white head kind of persisted for a little bit and faded away. You can rouse it a little bit. The bubbles cling to the edge of the glass a little bit. And it's got a little bit of some hop haze in there, which is forgivable for an IPA, but I scored it a 2 out of 3 for appearance. Flavor-wise, hop flavors come out first, but they're accompanied by a fairly high bitterness, which is also kind of coarse and just a little bit rough to me. The malt is lightly caramelly. The beer finishes, I would say, semi-dry. So the one thing that stood out to me, and I kept thinking about it, was it has this kind of odd stale orange juice impression. You know, it's not like orange juice, but it's like orange juice that's been sitting in the glass for a couple of hours, and then you drink it by accident or whatever. You know, not super sweet in that sense, but it's just like it's got that a fruity quality to it that sticks out a little high because maybe the hops are too low or have faded, perhaps. But I'm not getting any, you know, when I say stale, it's like stale orange, not like a bright fruitiness, but kind of a dulled fruitiness. And I'm not getting any big, any paper or cardboard in here either. So it's, you know, the balance is just slightly to the hop. I would like more hop here in the flavor, but it's, you know, it's in IPA territory. It's pretty tasty beer, and it's cleanly brewed. So, you know, not too much wrong here. Just most of these are fine points. But mouthfeel, medium light bodied, a little bit of astringency, probably coming from that hop, you know, edge, the bitterness, little roughness in there, bites you in the mouthfeel a little bit.
Yeah.
There is some faint warmth in there. It's got some alcohol to it. You can taste that.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel that warming. Medium low CO2, I would say a bit too low. You might want to push that up a little bit, and it could also drive out some of those hop aromas and flavors a little better and make it pop a little better. But, you know, it's kind of there, not very smooth or creamy, but not super biting either. It's, you know, kind of middle of the road. I guess this is leaning more towards the classic IPA territory. It's clean and it seems well brewed. It doesn't seem like have any zany kind of new world hops in it, like the big tropical things that you want. But I know also that I brewed it and it was brewed to be a tropical IPA. So that's kind of a juxtaposition there.
Okay.
But it also is, perhaps just a bit past its prime. Equinaut. Yeah. I don't know. We used some hops in it that we don't normally use when we're brewing our IPAs.
okay.
You made a beer and you put hops in it.
Trying a little experimentation there. Yeah. All right.
So I guess I'd like to get rid of that odd orange juice flavor. And I think, you know, my advice to the brewer is don't put orange juice in your beer. It's a bad thing to do.
Right.
And it gets stale really fast. So you don't want to drink that shit. It's bad.
Gotcha.
No. I'm pretty sure there's no orange juice in this beer unless Don added some to mess with
maybe
me when he was bottling it. But
I don't know.
Let's see what Brian says.
He seems like that kind of guy.
I gave it a 32. I thought it was okay. I thought it was pretty. It's
not just it's, okay. It's what very, is 32? There we go. Very good. All
it's
right.
A very good idea.
So I'm throwing this question out rhetorically. I don't want us to actually discuss this. But you know how people talk about making like maple syrup beers, and instead of water, they'll put in like frickin' 10 gallons of maple syrup, and it's for making like an imperial stout or stuff like that.
Right.
I wonder if you made a beer with orange juice instead of water. It'd probably be a remarkably bad idea. It's going to fuck up your pH. Shit. Everything about it's going to be wrong.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that would just make it like, citrusy, or if it would be just a shit show that you would not want to drink. I'm guessing the latter.
Yeah.
All right. Listeners, if any of you make an orange juice beer, make a gallon. What the hell? If it's send it in. If it's awful, send it in. Just tell us all about that. I'm just making stuff up on the fly at this point. All right. American IPA. sorry, Brian's like cracking up in the corner, and I can't not react to that. American IPA, I got prominent citrus and tropical aroma.
There we
Brian.
Go.
You just
there
mentioned
we go.
You wanted to make a tropical IPA. Got
Thank
tropical
you.
Fruit,
oh, man.
A hop aroma. Got some orange and lime in there, predominant, but definitely some tropical fruit and other things in there, too. No fruitiness from fermentation. It's a very different kind of estery fruitiness that you get from high-temperature fermentation than you get from hop character. No off aromas. Didn't get really any malt or alcohol, but that's all these things are what you want from an IPA. IPA can have a little malt, but this is not 1998 where you need to have like a balanced malt and hop aroma to have an IPA. Styles change, things change. 9 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. It's crystal clear. West Coast all the way, baby. West Side. I'm way too old and white to say shit like that, so let's pretend that I didn't say that, and I will commit not to saying that again. Head is medium and persistent. Color's medium gold. 3 out of 3. Flavor, this is how malleable flavor is, how suggestible it is. I didn't think this until you mentioned orange juice, and then I had a sip, and I could not get that frickin' Tropicana orange juice out of my mind. Specifically Tropicana. Yeah. If you remember being 7, or if you have a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old or whatever, the Tropicana is the total... I can't even read what you're holding up there, Brian.
And Brian, this is bad radio. What are you doing?
Sorry.
All right.
So we'll do that later.
Distracting.
Trying to make Bevo laugh.
You're distracting the other Brian.
So Tropicana is that orange juice that is very distinctly artificial, right? There's nothing natural about Tropicana. It's like sweet, and it has some kind of orange flavor or whatever. And I had a sip, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is Tropicana orange juice. And it doesn't really change. I still think it's a really good flavor, but I can't get that out of my head now while I'm drinking it. I thought it had a very orange character anyway.
Yeah.
Initially, to me, it's a surprising balance of kind of a malt sweetness and some floral citrus hop, but really more citrusy, more orangey. And it's not under-attenuated. It's a very well-attenuated beer, but the character that I get is almost... And we've talked about, like, you know, 90s style IPAs with this. You know, a lot of IPAs you would get, you know, 2000-ish, would be almost a little sweet in the front, not from under attenuation, but from malt.
Yeah.
To kind of balance out the bitterness. I definitely got that here. There's high hop flavor, definitely orange, citrus, some tropical fruit, high bitterness, but not to the point where it rips your tongue off. Definitely balances the malt, and the finish is long-lasting, balanced between bitterness and hop flavor and malt. No esters or off flavors. Give it 14 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Everything Brian said. Overall impression, 8 out of 10. That was very clean and well-made beer.
Yeah.
No off aromas, no off flavors. There's this weird Tropicana orange juice thing, which, and I'm wondering, we were sort of talking after I'd written the score sheet kind of off air, that maybe that sweetness that I'm getting up front might be a little bit of oxidation, given the age of this. The notes that I had is if you're mashing, maybe take a look at your malt bill and see if there's something like a honey malt or something that has unfermentables or some very distinct character to it that might be providing a perception of sweetness while still having high attenuation. But I suspect that maybe what's really happening here is maybe a little bit of oxidation that I'm perceiving as some sweetness, almost a slight honey-type character up front.
Yeah.
So overall, 39.
May I argue with you on mouthfeel? You gave it a 5 out of 5
Dude,
for mouthfeel?
Dude, I said that I totally agree with what you said for mouthfeel. I gave it a 5 out of 5.
I gave it a 3 out of 5.
So what were you? Maybe I got a little bit of alcohol. It's carbonation was maybe a little low. Yeah, I was generous about the carbonation, but I tend to be generous about carbonation because it's tough to carbonate at a homebrew level.
The carbonation was low, and it had a bit of astringency to it. It had a little astringent bite from the hops that are kind of the rough bitterness in there.
I don't get astringency. I mean, I get like
not
a
like
lot
an
of
over sparged kind of astringency, but just more like a rough bitterness, kind of harshness.
I guess it's an interesting point because this is a good discussion not to digress for 20 minutes about this.
I mean, I know bitterness is a flavor.
It's a good discussion about what is astringency.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The bitterness is high. There's maybe a little bit of a rough edge. I don't think it's maybe as rough as you think it is in my perception. But to me, astringency is that very specific, over-sparging, grape seed, oh my God, my mouth is going to fall apart type of thing. And if it's a rough bitterness, that's a flavor issue and it's not a mouthfeel issue.
Well, right,
that's
but
how I was always taught.
The guidelines also call out no harsh hop-derived astringency, that you don't want that in your IPA, and it's going to detract from it. So to me, this has that.
And this
a
is
little bit,
the,
not a whole lot, but it's just, it's there. It's kind of like, oh, there's a little bit of that hop-derived
kind of roughness. I hear you.
Biting your mouthfeel.
It's an example of how the guidelines, and I don't mean to, for a second, put down anyone that put those, it's an amazing amount of work that
they're
went into that.
Doing God's work.
but like any document, there's always a few things that are unclear or a little, maybe inconsistent.
Right.
And we're always taught as judges, astringency is not a flavor. Flavor goes in flavor. If it's astringent, it goes in mouthfeel. And then the guidelines say something about hop-derived astringency. I was like, guys, come on. And it's impossible to write a freaking 60-page document and not have
hops,
a few things like that.
The astringency is derived from the hops and not from over-sparging of the malt sometimes.
Yeah.
Then you look at the score sheet and, it calls for commenting on the finish under flavor, which to me is almost kind of a mouthfeel thing too. How dry does it finish? Well, that is dry a flavor? Is sweet is a flavor, but is dry a flavor?
But
I don't know.
I get that you're not trying to overscore your beer that you were a co-brewer of. So I get that you're kind of knocking a few points off, and I'm lifting. You're putting yourself down. I'm lifting you up.
Well, thank you. You landed at a what?
39.
Are you off your rocker, sir?
I'm insane, but is it? I've been doing this show for how long, and are you just now figuring this out?
Yeah, this is not a 39 beer. This is like a 36 beer.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like grapefruit pithy.
JP splits the uprights.
I was probably a little generous with this.
Yeah, you were feeling good. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't. We usually kick their asses out of here when we're judging the beer, but
the MDMA hadn't left Brian's system entirely. Like, I love this beer. This shit's hella good.
I'm not sure. Is that a thing that you would want to consume while you're drinking beer?
I have no idea.
That would be a good idea.
I don't know, Brian.
But it's,
don't take everything literally.
I know, but it's, right. Yes.
This is theater for the mind.
It's the LSD that really makes you not drink, taste the beer,
there
right?
There we go.
No, I was a little generous, but I think it's better than a 32.
Well, thank you.
I think it's better than 32 also, barely.
Yeah. Where do you think it is, Don? You're practically a beer judge.
Come on.
You're some guy.
And we should talk about the recipe a little bit, too.
Sure.
Yeah, briefly, though, because we honestly are running up against the break, so.
We'll do this other stuff real quick.
Don, let's go.
I think.
Someone poked Don.
34, 35.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Let's call it 35 because it's closer to me and then I feel vindicated. So let's say 35.
What malts and hops do we put in this bitch?
So,
you just called Don a bitch?
No, I called the beer a bitch.
Not. Okay, there's no comma. Got it, all right.
Not in the air, anyway.
No.
Maris Otter, 11 pounds. This is a little 7-pound batch.
7 gallon.
Seven gallon. Thank you.
All good?
Batch. Flaked oats, 2.5 pounds. Vienna malt, 9 ounces. Crystal 40, 8 ounces.
I think we're up to the sugar.
Did we? Maybe, because that's your writing and not mine, so I can't read it.
We started with 12, and then we let's go 16 because our gravity was low and we wanted to up it or something.
Yep. And then Munich, 3 ounces.
Why Crystal 40?
Brian has to answer that. It was pretty much his recipe.
Just give it some caramelly, classic IPA kind of caramelly flavors.
I definitely, there's a little caramel in there, and that's maybe some of that upfront sweetness that I get, which is maybe out of proportion to the very small amount of the caramel malt you put in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of harkens back to the classic IPA recipes that always had a little caramel malt in them. And,
right.
I still use that. I feel weird using too much just Munich or just other malts. I don't know. I always like to have a little bit of A little bit of crystal malt in my IPAs.
That's cool. Gives it a nice color.
Yeah.
I'm just asking. I'm not judging. I'm just asking.
Well, you're supposed to be judging. Well, that's the point of the show, Brian.
Okay, okay. I'll judge after you tell me why.
I'm so hot. Yeah, yeah. What do we got with hops there?
Hops, Magnum. Half an ounce Magnum, 60 minutes, 1.5 Citra, 5-1. What is that hop?
Equinaut.
Thank you. Equinaut. 5 minutes. 2 ounces of Mosaic, 5 minutes. Then dry hops, 2 ounces Citra, 1 ounce Equinaut, two of Mosaic. And then we actually did a second dry hop because really the hop flavor or hop aroma wasn't coming out in the in the beer. So we did another ounce of Citra, ounce of Mosaic, and 2.3 Galaxy.
Do you remember how did that Galaxy smell? Sometimes I like... I really liked. I had a beer that was all Galaxy at Stellar Maker in San Francisco, and it was amazing. And it was hazy and weird, but it was just like wow.
Hmm.
And I liked the character of that, you know, in the hazy. I thought, well, this would be good with our tropical IPA. Let's mix that in and just see what happens. You know, it needs some a little more zing to it. But it never quite got that zing we wanted. It was there and it was good when it was fresh.
Yeah,
It was pretty good when it was fresh, but it's faded a little bit since you know.
Well, it was brewed July 20th of last year.
Yeah,
so it's kegged it's in August. Kind of and reaching its
It's still very drinkable.
Geriatric moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Well done, I love guys. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for sharing. Chico Ale yeast, or what did we do there?
You know, we got that yeast from a local brewery.
Oh, yeah.
A Shadow? I have no idea what the yeast was, actually.
I think it was from Shadow Puppet. I think it might have been the 1968?
Somehow it did not get written down.
Okay.
It could have been.
That'll happen,
beer
boys.
We had while we were brewing.
Right. Yeah, were you drinking?
Maybe.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Might have been some drinking involved.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for sharing. Appreciate that
thanks
very much,
for
you guys.
Us on the show. For we're sure. To brew better next time.
Please do. Please do. Now that Keith is gone, you need someone to mess up. Someone else to mess up now.
For sure.
Mm. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a fast break, everybody, and we'll be right back talking about score sheet judging, how to write them properly, because whatever you're doing, it's probably wrong. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Now count backwards from 100. 99, 98, that's it. 97, 96, 95.
Now back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, thanks for sticking with us, everybody. So, if you're here still, if you haven't left yet, which I wouldn't blame you because, you know, not everybody's into this deep of judging kind of things, but if you're still around, I'm assuming that you're interested in how to properly fill out a score sheet, or maybe even you just want to get some insight into how score sheets are filled out so you're not as angry as I used to be whenever I would get the score sheets back. No, I don't understand any of this. This wasn't even my beer. So, here to help us with that is two people you may have never heard of, Brian Cooper and Brian Sharp.
Hello.
Well, yeah. I'm putting on my Dave Teckham hat right now because he's my judging mentor, and he helps me teach the beer judging one-on-one class that we do every year, and sometimes more than once a year.
And he's a super nice guy.
As a part of SF Beer Week. Yes, super nice guy.
Yeah.
And so we did it at Bottle Taps this year. We had a really good, enthusiastic crowd at Bottle Taps in Pleasanton, and it was fun. You know, like, they're always just chiming in with things. There's no wrong answer. When you're in a beer judging class with Dave, like, you just call something out, like, I taste baby diaper. Whatever. Like, it's like, And then maybe someone else is getting the same thing, and they were just like, they had it on the tip of their brain, put those, neurons together and get some people on the same wavelength in there. But we've brought up a lot of judges over the years in the Bay Area, and maybe some of them moved beyond and inspired others by now. But when I think about filling out a score sheet, the first thing I think about is doing it completely so that you're not leaving something important out. You're not going to not comment on the hops in the nose of a beer, even when it's a non-hoppy style, like a Vienna lager. You're going to comment on the what kind of hops are in there.
And if there's no hops, you're going to say no hops.
Yeah. And no is not a wrong answer.
No. Some styles, you don't expect to have hop aroma in the aroma. They should be malt only.
That's right.
Right. So what, you know, everybody can download the current version of the beer score sheet from the BJCP.
BJCP.org.
You know, first you put your name, if you have a judge ID, you put that in there in your email, and your rank. There's a lot of different ranks. It encompasses a lot of things. You can be, you know, rank pending. You just took the exam. You can
double secret master
beer. You can have non-BJCP qualifications, and Cicerones can fill out score sheets. No problem, you know, and they have different ranks of those now. You can have had sensory training, you know, a lot of different things. So, you know, you don't just have to be BJCP certified to fill one of these things out.
That's correct. Down the cops will not be called on you.
Of course not, no.
Well, mostly.
Down along the left side, they have descriptor definitions. Mark all that apply. And this, you know, a distinction that is made on the left side, you know, it's acetaldehyde, alcoholic, astringent. You should check those, even if they're appropriate for the style and it's there. You should check those. It's like, okay, it's a, you know, it's a sulfury beer. It's a lager that has, you know, it can have a bit of sulfur. Okay, yeah, it does have a little bit of that. And you can check that. And if you want to write light next to it, you can do something like that too, or whatever the level is, or heavy, or, you know, or it's only in the nose or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Brian, that list to me on the left is like a built-in cheat sheet for this, whether you're judging or taking the exam. Because you can kind of freak out a little bit and not know, oh my God, I'm smelling this thing, I'm tasting this thing, what is it? Yeah. And it's take a breath for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Look at this list of descriptor definitions. And it's got pretty much, it hits the highlights of the major things, good and bad, you're going to taste in a beer. And just take a moment to look at it. You know, I'm also the guy that always forgets to X the thing.
Yeah.
I got to remember, you know, take a moment, look at the list. Is anything that I wrote one of these things I need to check off? It's a nice list to have that's really helpful to me, at least.
That is probably one of the biggest things that I forget to check off if I put sulfur in the aroma, and I don't check it over there automatically, and I should. And for good completeness, if you're taking the exam especially,
yes,
you want to, you know, check those boxes where something stands out in a beer. You should check it, whether if it's appropriate for the beer or not. And in the comments section, you can mark whether it's appropriate or not. Of course, you also kind of run out of time and space for words to write. Like, can I comment on whether the hop is appropriate and the malt is appropriate and the this and that and the esters and that? You know, you can't do everything. So you have to kind of focus first on the big picture stuff. And I always think, how much and what kind? That's the biggest point on these things when you're commenting.
Excellent point. That's a great way to put that.
Under these headings. But first, you know, of course, you write the category and subcategory. If there's an entry number, you're judging a competition, you write that out, spell out the subcategory, and any special ingredients that are declared.
I don't want to dwell on that, but I really love how you put that how much and what kind is like five words that you can remember. And those are such key things to remember writing a score sheet.
It's the guiding light. It's like 9/10 of the way to getting, like, if you do that well, you'll be writing a good score sheets and getting a good score on the exam if you choose to take it.
I think you're getting a gold star from the AMA for that little thing right there.
Yeah.
So the first thing you do is you inspect the bottle. You know, you're going down the right side now of the, you know, fill in the category, et cetera. Inspect the bottle. Make, you know, is there any scuzz on there? Is there something in the bottom? Does it look bottle condition? You can shine a flashlight through it if you want. Look at the bottom of the bottle. See what's there. How high is the fill? Is it like, you know, a quarter of an inch from the top? Or is it like, you know, 2 inches hanging down low? You know, or is it just right? You know, like 3/4 inch or above? Hey, you know, note that. And you know, give some forgiveness. You can have a bad fill and you can't just automatically assume the beer's going to be tasting horrible. You can have a super overfilled beer, like right up to the top, and it could be just fine. You never know.
Right. And the bottle fill doesn't count for points at all. But the interesting thing about bottle fill, and you know, for those of you that like to enter competitions, thing to keep in mind, one of the things that experienced judges will look at is, you know, there's kind of a standard level of fill. If it's all the way up to the top, people will note, oh, this person really made sure that know, he or she got that beer right up to the cap.
Mm-hmm.
If it's way low, you'll look, okay, it's way low. Either way, it's probably okay. The thing that you're going to look for and be very wary of is the ring around the liquid.
Yeah.
And the ring around the bottleneck is usually a symptom of infection. And a ring around the bottle often means I'm going to stand back and put this in a bucket and try to open this very carefully because this might explode.
You could have a gusher on your hands. Yeah.
So it's the bottle fill. It doesn't count for any points, but it's very, from a presentation standpoint, it really sets the stage for what an experienced judge expects from that beer.
Right, yeah. And anything unusual about the bottle? The bottle had it's a crown cap bottle, but they put a cork in it. Or it's like somebody, this passed the inspection somehow. Or whatever, random, you see really random weird stuff, like embossed lettering on the bottle that's not supposed to be in a competition.
Or a bottle cap that's like weird color or something. Yeah. And technically, these things are disqualifiable offenses. I am not sure I've ever seen anybody get DQ'd in a comp in 15 plus years of judging, but you're running a risk, and it's kind of a, if you just happen to have weird ass, U.S. flag bottle caps, that's all you got, just better to use them than not enter. But if that's a thing, like everyone in your area knows, Brian always puts these caps on, that's kind of a dick.
I remember
thing
being paranoid when I first entered competitions too, and I was like, oh man. I like the oxy caps, make sure I'm removing oxygen from the headspace, et cetera. And they all say oxy cap on the side. Mm-hmm. Isn't that printed lettering? And then there's nothing specific in these rules. And the first time I entered a competition, I was like, is this okay? And I asked the competition organizer, oh, yeah, that's fine. And then when I organized a competition, I made sure to write all that stuff in, pre-printed beer caps with such as oxy cap on the side are acceptable.
Yeah, the thing with like the oxy cap is more like the Air Bud rules. So that's more okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we digress.
Yes. This is all part of the discussion we're having. Actually, it's not a digression.
That's right.
It's important. And if you do ever have a question about if you're judging a competition, it's important to make sure that somebody's not cheating and their buddy's sitting at the table with you and rating it a 40 and it's actually a 25 point beer. And you should ask the organizer, is this cap okay like this? Like somebody put a really distinct cap on here. Is this acceptable?
Yeah.
But just regular. Colors are fine, blue, gold, silver, black, whatever. And if you have a cap with some writing on it, you can always black it out as an entrant. You can always just black it out with magic marker, and usually it's indiscernible.
Exactly.
So getting into aroma, I mean, you hear us comment all the time. We comment on the malt, we comment on the hops, comment on the esters and other aromatics. And this is just, it's written right there for you. Mm-hmm. For the malt, you want to say what kind and how much. For the hops, you want to say what kind and how much. And not just the main thing that's sticking out. Oh, it's a citrusy hop at a high level. Well, what's behind that citrus? Is there a dankness, a resininess, a pininess?
And what kind of citrus? Is it orange? Specific, is it lemon? Specifics. Is it lime? Can you identify that? And you mentioned my friend Kevin Pratt. I'm sure you got Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin told me 10 plus years ago, and it was extremely helpful. Kevin's an amazing judge, grandmaster, whatever at this point. And he had said, look, they tell you right on the score sheet. Here's the thing. Describe, comment on malt, hops, esters, and other aromatics. Well, it's right there in front of you. Comment on malt, hops, and esters. Whether are they there? At what level? What do you smell? And that was... Believe it or not, that was actually really helpful to me when I was just a newbie judge, because I wasn't really sure about any of this stuff. And when he was like, dude, it's right there on the sheet. It's telling you what they're asking
for. Just read the
sheet. That was really good to know.
And that was some of the best advice. He gave me the exact same advice, too. Yeah. I said, Kevin, and he helped teach some of our earlier beer judging classes in the Mad Zymergists. And I'm like, well, what's the difference? I had taken the exam and I scored, fair to middling. I got past it, got it. Okay. But I'm like, what's the difference? I'm going to retake the judging exam. And what do I need to do to get, a 90 as opposed to a 75? And he's like, well, look at, make sure you're coming on everything. Do it completely.
Yeah.
And other aromatics. Look at every section. There's other aromatics in the appearance. Don't forget to comment on the texture of the head. All these details are listed there for you. Mm-hmm. Other flavor characteristics under flavor. and other palate sensations. That's kind of a hard one, but there are some. You know, sometimes you can have some pain from beer. So, you know, there's certain qualities that you can get.
Hopefully you shouldn't have much pain unless you drop like a six-pack on your
foot. A chili beer or something, for example.
Exactly.
Like
that
burns
can
your
be a
tongue.
Painful.
You get a pain sensation. It's not always, you know, but or slickness from diacetyl, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. So, and that opened my eyes, and I was able to write a more complete score sheet at that point.
Exactly.
After a lot of practice. So, yeah, appearance-wise, I guess did we cover aroma, malt, hops, esters, other aromatics? Don't forget esters. That's an easy one to forget, because are they light, medium, high? Are they kind of general fruity esters, or is there a specific kind of fruit that's coming out? And do they seem to be hop, or do they seem to be yeast derived, or are they something that's coming out from a malt, like you have a double, and you're getting a big cherry or a big, you know, some fruity raisiny richness in there? It's like, well, that seems to be a malt derived raisiny ester in there. That's a great comment. You know, at a medium level, be specific and you know, list the things that jump out first, and then the subtle undertones as well. And, you know, for other under aroma characteristics, what Pratt told me was just, you know, no DMS or diacetyl if it doesn't have that, or yep. Acetaldehyde.
Like the big two or three off aromas, are they there? Write about it. If they're not, say, you know, no DMS, no diacetyl, no off aromas.
Yeah. And don't forget alcohol. Don't just read this. Okay, I comment on malt, hops, esters. Well, you're drinking a big boozy barley wine. Are you going to comment on the alcohol? Yeah, huh? You're going to comment on that, because it's not going to be complete if you don't.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when I took the test and did the classes with Techum, Dave Techum, one of the things that helped me out was you comment on it to style. Don't forget you're not yes. sitting there picking flaws. You're comparing this to the written document of the styles.
Yeah.
So if something is there, that's fine to note it, and you know, note it, but is it to style or not?
Yeah,
that's what the brewer's looking for, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Is this grapefruit pith to style or not? Well, right. Not in a porter. So if you taste it, then put grapefruit pithy, not to style, because that's really the feedback that homebrewers are looking for.
Right on. Right.
You know.
Yeah, and you don't want to be just a fault finder, because that's not a fun score sheet to read.
Yeah,
it's like, oh well, it's fine
and
for the most
bad,
part.
And this is bad, and this is bad too, and I don't like this.
Yeah,
yeah, and. Yeah, I mean, if it is really bad, then it should be a 13-point beer, and it's okay. Sorry, you know, you missed everything, and it's not to style, and it's got all these defects. But you know, you should, if there are defects there, you should note the levels of it: light, diacetyl, or you know, et cetera.
Where are we at right now?
So also don't forget to write clearly and legibly, because you're not writing it for yourself; you're writing it for someone that's going to take it home and read it. And hopefully try to brew the beer better the next time. And I feel the quality of homebrew has improved so much over the years as we get, you know, as you judge competitions, you taste beers that are like right on par and better sometimes than the stuff you get commercially. And that's great.
Oh, man, I haven't judged a beer as a 13 for probably 7 or 8 years. And that was not unusual in 03, 04, 05. Mm-hmm. To have more than one 13-point beer in a competition or in the first round of a big
comp. Somebody was honestly
comp.
Trying to figure out what they did wrong, and you can help them. But, yeah, it's a lot rarer now, and you're splitting hairs. And like, so this is a 35, this one's a 39, or a right. you know, 40-something. Yeah. Then you still get the 20s and sometimes the teens, but, you know, it's less and less. People,
exactly.
There's a lot of good information out there.
What where are we at right now, Brian?
Appearance. Don't forget to comment on the color and be specific. Is it orange?
We're still on appearance. We got 10 minutes left in the show.
Okay.
We'll move faster.
Hold on. That's what I'm trying to ask you. Let me take a break real fast, because we still have to do one more break, and then we'll come back and let's try to mosey on through the complete. All right. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Cans.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine, or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Everybody, thanks for sticking around. We're going to wrap up this BJCP score sheet. BJCP?
Yeah, that's what I said.
BJCP. For me, sometimes it's a hard thing to say.
Well, BJCP. Apparently I said it correctly, but I didn't think I did in my head.
If you say it fast, it's like a tongue twister. BJCP. Yeah. Okay.
All right, so
we're on appearance.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go through this really logically and clearly and quickly because... it's really not that hard. Just follow the cues. It tells you to comment on the color. Is it, you know, what specific color is it? And are there any like highlights behind it? Is it like an orangey amber or is it a reddish amber or is it a, et cetera? The clarity, is it lightly hazy or, you know, murky? Can't see it. For a dark beer, you want to look at the corners and see if you can even see through the corners because it can be clear but almost opaque because of the darkness. The head, you want to make sure you comment on the retention, which is how long it lasts. The color of that head, which is different from the beer. Sometimes you have a dark beer with a really light-colored head. And just what's there? Is it cream-colored, beige, white, eggshell, you know, tan, dark tan? And the texture of the head. You know, there's like creamy, mousse-like, frothy, large, small bubbles. You know, it's easy to talk about head texture because there's so many different variations of that. And, you know, hoppy beers will be different from malty beers sometimes and just the way the head forms and beers with a lot of protein will be thick and creamy and depending on the size of the protein chains, there's all kinds of different variations you can comment on.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think appearance, I find it hard to think about what to write for this sometimes. And all the things Brian was talking about are helpful. I like to think there's three lines. There's three things you're talking about. Try to fill up essentially one line for each one. And when it comes to head, you know, persistence and size, you know, it doesn't mean it has to be an inch thick for half an hour. Persistence means you have some bubbles even on the edge for, you know, 10, 15 minutes. So that's a topic for another day.
Doesn't just go to a flat top.
In terms of what we're doing right now for writing a score sheet, three lines, three things, there's enough details, you can write them down.
Exactly.
And score-wise, I tend to give 1 point for color, one for clarity, and one for head. If one is off,
pretty much everyone
I'll take
does
away
that,
a point. So
I think.
That's a good rule of thumb there.
And I realized, I think I sounded like I was shitting on you with that, but
I didn't mean that at all. Yeah. And flavor-wise, you know, you want to comment on the malt. There's malt in every beer. There's hops in every beer. You want to comment on the hops. And what, you know, the fermentation, was it an ale or a lager? Is it expected to be... or is it a hybrid? What is the beer? And, you know, did they do that fermentation properly? Or are there weird characters sticking out that are related to the fermentation? You know, a super estery beer or, you know, something, you know, diacetyl that came out in the fermentation. Balance, usually talking about malt versus hops, but it can also be, you know, if it's a beer that's very yeast influenced, it could be the yeast to something else. So don't just think about it as malt versus hops, but other things can come into play too and affect the overall balance. Make a little comment about the balance of the beer. The finish is always just how dry or sweet it is in the very end. You know, how does it dry off of your tongue or stick around with sweetness? And then,
and I have maybe a little different perspective. I totally agree with you, but also like, how long is it?
How long is it? Yeah,
like when you take a sip, does it fall off a cliff and it's like you never drank it, or does it last for like a minute afterwards? And that's part of that length, and how balanced is that in the length?
And when I'm grading score sheets in a in an exam set, a lot of people will confuse aftertaste with finish, but they're two completely different things. You know, aftertaste is flavors that linger into the aftertaste. What's sticking around the longest? And sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I get this big, you know, maltiness up front, but then this hop lingers in the aftertaste somehow, whatever, you know, whatever flavor it is.
Mm-hmm. And then, whatever you call it, write about it.
Yeah. And then it calls out other flavors, you know, other flavor characteristics. One, don't ever forget to comment about the bitterness. That is a component of most beers that, you know, there are very few beers that don't have any bitterness. And, you know, comment on that. And then other can also be, you know, is there DMS, diacetyl, et cetera. So esters, you know, phenolics. Those kind of tie in with fermentation characteristics as well. So, but, you know, there's a lot of others you can do. There's soy sauce, whatever. So going on to, you know, flavor, you just be creative and describe what you're getting first, and then subtle undertones next, and, you know, always how much and what kind. Then getting into, you know, and don't make any assumptions. Don't call out specific ingredients if you can avoid it. Like,
don't assume anyone's mashed versus using extract. Yeah, never assume anything.
That's a big thing. Mouthfeel. This one's pretty easy. It's all right there for you. Comment on the body. Is it full bodied? Is it light body? Is it watery or syrupy? Basically, think of it as, you know, the spectrum between molasses and pure water. Or alcohol, which is actually lighter than water. Carbonation, is it high, medium, low, medium, high, etc.? Warmth is from alcohol. You feel a warmth going down your throat as you drink a really thick 10% beer.
Yeah,
it goes down your throat and you feel that warmth. Your mouthfeel is maybe the hardest concept to understand. It's not easy, but it's not anything to do with flavor. It's not anything to do with aroma. It's just, how does the beer feel in your mouth?
Yeah.
Is it creamy and silky like a good oatmeal stout should be? You know, is it astringent and biting like that hop astringency we were talking about? You know, it's like, but usually astringency comes from oversparging, and like then you get to the overall impression where you tell them how to fix that. And, other is a thing. You can say it's smooth and silky, or is it biting? Does it have a carbonic bite to it? Sometimes you get a light lager. A bite, you know, carbonic quality. CO2 is an acid. It actually stings your tongue a little bit, and we get a really super carbonated beer. Beer can be crisp, like a nice, you know, a Pils or a good a Kolsch. It can be slick if there's diacetyl present. So there's a lot of different others you can comment on. Sometimes they're not there, and, you know, you just kind of go through it and get through it there. But we were listening to the show on the way up, and Warren actually said, this beer has, he was talking about Rich's Vienna lager. He said, nice carbonation. Well, that doesn't tell me much.
No, nice is...
The David Teckham is coming on me
nice
now.
Nice is not a descriptor. Nice. It's high, low, medium, none, you know,
how
whatever.
Much?
Nice does not convey any information.
And is it to style?
Right.
Right, and yeah. And you should always just comment, is it?
Yeah, well, that's why Warren sucks.
This is a highly carbonated beer.
We've established that.
Okay, we're drinking a mild. Is it supposed to be highly carbonated? No, you should say that.
Well, you know, mouthfeel to me is one of the hardest things to write about. I think, just like what you were saying, this is a place in the score sheet where I think it's important to use the no, low, medium, high, right, in terms of these things. But there's a whole universe between creaminess and astringency. Right? Because like an IPA is not an oatmeal stout. It's not creamy. But it's not astringent either. So think about words like, you know, it's perky, it's prickly, it's whatever. You know, read... If you're taking the exam or you're serious about getting better, you know, taking the exam or judging, read Zymergy. Mm-hmm. Every month they have the commercial calibration. You've got, you know, four
grandmasters. Those are some actual good judges, yeah.
Yeah, you got, like, as opposed to us guys, you know, you have, like, four grandmaster plus, you know, ex, you know, double secret grandmaster folks, Gordon and three other people. And they are, it's really kind of invaluable, especially if you're trying to write the exam as you're advancing in ranks, or if you want to get better just judging. Things that you have a problem with, for me, it was mouthfeel. It was helpful to me to go back and look at, what are these people writing about mouthfeel, and how are they writing it? It would help me think about it when I was judging. Otherwise, like, carbonation low. Right. It's not creamy. It's not astringent. But, yeah, the thing that's I was saying earlier, do what the score sheet says. This is the one place where I think it kind of leaves out, you know, a lot of beers aren't creamy, but that's fine for their style. A lot of beers, you know, they should be perky or whatever, but just write about it. Write about whatever it is. And that's in general, not just mouthfeel, but whatever you taste, whatever the person sitting across the table from you says or whatever, if you taste it or you perceive it, write it down.
It's not wrong to you.
It's not wrong.
It's not wrong.
Exactly.
And that's actually how you get confidence to advance.
So I think part of the point of that is you don't want to be too robotic in writing your score sheets. I comment on this, this.
The carbonation is low.
And
the
reading,
warmth is not present. Yes.
Reading those score sheets in Zymergy is kind of, it's an exercise in efficiency and writing with fewer words. The essence of that beer, like they're calling out things that are, this is important to this beer, this should be here, but it's not, or this is not here, and but it actually still works somehow, or, you know, and they'll comment on things that are important to that beer,
right,
and talk about why it works. And then that's where we get to the overall impression slash, you know, suggestions for improvement. And don't ever forget suggestions for improvement, because that's, you know, overall impression is like, okay, the pleasure of drinking this beer. It's kind of a big picture description. This is also where you can get some kind of wiggle room. It's like, well, it has all the marks, but there's something that's kind of missing, or it's, you know, you have a little leeway where overall impression is like, this beer hit all the marks, but somehow it's just not quite there for me. There's something missing, and you might not be thinking of it, but what really stands out in the beer, and what is its strength, and what is its weakness, and how good of an example is it to the declared style? Try to give some comment. You usually want to be giving some kind of compliment, being positive about the beer, even if it's followed by some mention of the deficiencies and how to fix them. So a lot of people are entering them. They might not know the deficiencies are there. Some people can't taste diacetyl. They don't know what it tastes like. It's, you know, but if it's there, you call it out, you tell them how to fix it, and then maybe they'll be more careful about their diacetyl rests the next time. But yeah, what did you like in the beer? What did you think needed improvement? If it's not a 50-point beer, you need to give some feedback as well to tell them how to improve it. It's a 49. Well, how do you get to that 50? I don't know. Add a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. If you get a really defective beer, your feedback's going to be a lot longer. You're going to be talking about a lot of different things that went into making that beer and how to fix each of those things. And you can even write on the back of the score sheet if you want to, like, draw a little arrow.
I do that all the time. It's the Roger St. Denis thing, and I will write on the back all the time. And you know what, Brian, and not to jump, I was jumping for just a second. Don't be afraid to score a beer over 40 if you believe it's over 40.
Or over 45.
Over 45. You know, if it is, you know, there's kind of those soft limits of like 17 at the lower end and 45 at the higher end that judges kind
of
acquire.
If it's outstanding, if it's world-class beer, like this is the best Meritzen I've ever had.
And you know how I got to be a master level judge and higher was just to be like, fuck it. This is what I taste. And I don't care if anybody, I don't care if, because when sometimes when you're starting off, you're like, oh, I don't want to give this beer a 44. Because what if the other judges laugh at me and they scored at 20 and I'm not getting something?
I've been there.
And when you have that confidence to be like, yo, fuck it. This is what I taste. This is good. This beer, I think this is a 44. It can be scary when you're younger or newer or starting off to score a beer really high.
Yeah,
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Just write what you taste.
So then you just total the scores, you know, total your scores, check your math. If you totaled above 50, you've added your math wrong.
Then give this beer a 64.
The take home is to definitely use specific descriptors. Really, don't be vague. Don't say, well, maybe some diacetyl, or, you know, don't guess what's there. Just tell them what you perceive and at what level it is. And for God's sake, don't leave any blank space. I have a hard time leaving, not writing in the extra lines under the blanks and into the next section and in the margins, because there's always something to comment on. There's so much you can say about any beer that you taste. And if you can't, I'll help you get there. We can help educate you, and we help
That's
educate
right.
judges here
you
locally.
You appear to have sparged through microwave popcorn.
Another error is kind of don't give ranges. It's not going to be low to no hop aroma or medium to high carbonation. It's either medium high or maybe medium high if you want to get specific.
Oh, damn.
Whatever.
Don't ever write medium See, high.
I'm not sure what medium high means, and I'm...
There was a beer tonight
baffled.
Where I said it was like medium bodied... Plus, it was like a little more than medium bodied. It wasn't medium high. I can be that specific. It's not that hard to do. But just don't give ranges. Say very low or medium high or wherever it's at. And then you get to the bottom. There's the check boxes for classic example versus not style on the stylistic accuracy. Technical merit is flawless and or significant flaws. And there's five boxes for that. And then intangibles is another kind of like, well, where is it kind of subjective stuff, like is it wonderful or lifeless? What's it can be perfectly flawless but still somehow just a little meh.
Or it can be flawed but you love it, in which case it's like that's what that thing is for.
I love popcorn beer.
Exactly.
But yeah, if it's just check the box, if check a box there always and find where it's at, and then check the boxes on the left if you've commented on those things. But really, that's about it.
I love it.
Just kind of look at everything that's there. Everything that you need to put on there is requested on the sheet, but also try to use good wording and try to be descriptive when you talk about your beers. The beer judge exam is graded on your perception of the beer versus the proctors that judge it with you, and how well you did that, how well you described the beer. Perception, descriptive ability, your scoring accuracy.
And those are two separate dimensions, your ability to describe against your ability to perceive what other experienced judges are perceiving.
Right. And your feedback and... your completeness. So
yes.
I've kind of covered completeness. Like, that's something that I'd like to focus on.
You covered completeness, Brian?
Yeah, I think we should.
We're done. JP's getting tired.
Oh, I'm falling asleep. There's a lot in here that we could focus on in certain sections and take 15 minutes specifically on, like, mouthfeel.
We could drink a beer and talk about it.
So we'll do more of these kind of series in the future, but... For this one, we sort of wanted to, do a general overview about what these sections are and how to address it, properly.
And parse what you're getting back from the competition, yeah.
All right, I think it's time to go, everybody. I'm tired, you're tired, we're all tired together.
I'm okay.
Brian's MDA is kicking in. Indiana.
Send us beer, Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. Give me an email.
Do it. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in, and we'll see you.